Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, John Worth, I'm here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. I'm here with my collaborator and partner in crime, Jamie Lasanti. The French Open draw for 2019 has just been released within the last few moments. So before I leave for Paris, Jamie and I are going to go through the draw, do a little preview. I would be remiss if I failed to point out that Tennis Channel will be broadcasting from Roland Garros starting Sunday, the French Open, and Jamie does not like this, is the lone Grand Slam, the lone major, that begins play on a Sunday, trying to get an extra session out of the players. Whether that's reflected in prize money or not is a discussion for another time. So anyway, here's the draw. It has just come out, again, literally within minutes. I don't know, Jamie, where should we begin? I guess we'll start. You know what? Let's do something different. Let's start on the women's side. You know why? Because I'm looking at the top quadrant. And you know what I'm seeing?
What are you seeing?
Naomi Osaka's bid to win three straight majors, something no female player's done except for Serena Williams in the last quarter century. Naomi Osaka is attempting to do that, and I don't like her odds. You know why?
Why is that?
Because she plays the winner of Ostapenko and Azarenka. Those are two major winners in the past. They will play in the first round, and the winner gets to play Osaka. Then I see other players. I see Maria Sakkari, who beat Kvitova in Rome and is an ascending young player. She looms. Caroline Garcia, who was in the top 10 not that long ago, she is in that quadrant. Madison Keys, a semifinalist last year at Roland Garros, is in that quadrant. Same for a player from America. She's 37 years old. I suspect you've heard her name. Serena Williams is in that quadrant. And even Bianca Andreescu, who won Indian Wells. It's an interesting draw for Naomi Osaka, but if I were a betting man, and I hasten to say I'm not, I don't like her chances here. That's a rough draw for
you forgot
for Naomi
Ash
Osaka.
Barty all the way down there in that quadrant too.
Ash Barty's in that same quadrant?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Ash Barty's the last name in that quadrant. Wow.
Yeah.
Against Jesse Pegula.
Yeah,
that's a
so it's a
wow, that what do we call that? The quarter of death?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, first of all, Ostapenko, Azarenka, first rounder.
Who do you like?
Sign me up.
Who
what
do you
time
like?
Is it start?
So apparently, I'm just looking this on Twitter. Stuart Fraser, or someone tweeted this. I'll give Stuart Fraser credit just because he's a good follow. I don't know if he's the one. But apparently the MC of the draw said, that's a good match several years ago. Salty.
I was listening to the
you
draw
know what?
On silent.
Did you? Oh, oh you missed you missed
screen.
That salty line. I would say not so fast. Ostapenko only won this event 2 years ago, and Azarenka has been playing some inspired tennis, playing a lot of doubles with the aforementioned Ash Barty. Azarenka, a two-time major winner. She knows her way around a clay court. I like that match. I don't care if it's 2 years ago. I'm watching Azarenka Ostapenko.
Same. I mean, I think it's because we expect those names to be, you know, pitted against each other in the second or third round. I mean, when you got those two names, one of them is going to be out at the end of that match.
And the winner gets to play the one seed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good matchup.
I like that first round matchup.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That is a rough part of the draw, though.
Yeah, I mean, Serena should have, you know, no trouble first rounder, but after that,
yeah, she gets
yeah, I mean, she could. I mean, if Naomi gets through, that's her quarterfinal.
But before she gets there,
even before she gets there, yeah, exactly. I mean, she has so much to go through.
Yeah, that's a lot of heavy lifting. This was not a great draw for either Williams sister because I am jumping ahead to the bottom half of the draw and I see that Venus plays. Did you see that?
I did.
Svitolina. The ninth seed. This is why
unseeded.
What
Venus Williams?
Well, exactly. You right. You
Sorry.
You gave no. You gave me a you gave me a softball. You're exactly right. This is why it's so important to be a top 32 player or to have a top 32 seed because otherwise you have that top 32 seed and you are guaranteed not to play anyone until the third round. Conversely, you're number 33 and below, you could face anyone. Jamie, let's sort of go big picture, and then we can burrow down a bit. Simona Halep is the defending champion. Sloane Stephens was a finalist last year. 2 years ago, as we talked about, Ostapenko won this event. Mugu, who's now remarkably not a top 20 player, is a former champion as well.
That is remarkable.
That's an awful lot of game and an unseemly ranking. But who do you like? I mean, if you're picking favorites here, we've talked about this all the time, that the women's fields tend to be wide open. That certainly is reflected in the betting. Give me your top three picks in order.
Yeah, I think it's hard. So I was working on our round table before the draw came out, and after the draw came out, that first quarter just literally shook up everything. I think I just hit delete on my entire Word doc. You gotta give Serena a chance. I mean, just like Federer, I think on the men's side, you know, someone who hasn't played there, or, you know, just hasn't played that much. They're both late in their careers, but at the end of the day, they are both big time champions. Serena has won 3 times in Paris, and, you know, Federer not so much, but you can't count her out.
Right.
I don't care about the knee injuries. I don't care about, you know, her not playing as much. She gets rolling here. I don't see why she can't do some sort of damage. You worry about Naomi Osaka in that quarter. So she was someone who I thought could really do something here, and that worries me a bit. Speaking to our colleague Stanley Kay the other day, I think Simona Halep has a good chance now, also seeing her draw. She's been kind of like quietly under the radar in the, you know, the past few months leading up to this tournament, which I think is the way she kind of prefers to operate. And I think that could do well for her.
No titles in 2019 for Simona Halep. You are picking the player who's not only the defending champion, but as we record this, she's also number one with she's a betting favorite. So you are a lot of people in agreement.
What about
with you? I don't know. I mean, I have some recency bias. Pliskova coming off the Rome title is a player to like. I don't know. I mean, I think Serena, you know, I'll go back to Serena. What do we always say about players when they get older? Sort of a lot has to go right. I don't think a lot is going to go right for Serena, unfortunately. I mean, I think if she had a soft draw, if the weather cooperated, if she got through the first week without much of a sweat, but boy, she's probably going to have to work just to get through the middle weekend, and you wonder what she has left. Serena, we just don't have the data points, right? I mean, she's mm-hmm. Serena Williams, and
that's what I think it is.
Underestimate her.
Can't.
Yeah, I mean, the ball striking is second to none. The competitive will is second to none. She's beaten 6 players this year. So I think we just haven't seen the match play. Sloane Stephens?
I was going to say, Sloane Stephens, I think, is the wild card here, which I think we could say about her in any Grand Slam tournament. You know, which side of the bed is she going to wake up on?
Right.
She was a runner-up last year, and I think she really thought she could win that match. I think that was a match I remember her seeing her afterwards, and then she was a lot more like visibly upset at the loss than I remember her. You know, sometimes I think she really just like says, okay, I played great, I got this far, and she's a little bit happy with that. When she lost to Halep, I think she really thought she could do it. And I think that could help her, hurt her this year. I don't know.
Nice clay court player Sloane Stephens is. I'll give you 5 names.
Recently engaged, by the way.
That's right. And new coach as well. A lot of changes with Sloane.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let me, I'm going to throw you 5 names. Just have at them.
All
ready?
Right.
Let's start with Kiki Bertens, hot player from the Netherlands, who you got the news report. You got the breaking news that she's a top 5 player. She's the fourth seed here. She's her clay court record speaks for itself. Nice late career surge, a bit of a late bloomer, but better late than never. What she's the fourth seed, and she is in the Sloane Stephens quadrant. What do we think about Kiki Bertens, Jamie?
That's an interesting quadrant. I think if you looking at the draw, it's probably the second toughest. I would say.
I'd agree with that. I mean, Bencic would be my pick to get through that quadrant.
Right. And so that's what I was going to say is that, you know, looking at that draw, I think she has a chance here. And she's one of those players that's really tricky. And I think she frustrates a lot of her opponents. So it could be interesting if she gets through. You have Konta, Donavecic. But Bencic is kind of my... my little dark horse.
Mine as well. We did not rehearse this in advance. I think, you know, the other thing I think we forget sometimes is that from players nearby, from players from the Netherlands, as Bertens is, players from Belgium, even players from Switzerland, it's kind of a home game. I mean, Basel, Switzerland, where Roger's from, is as far away from Paris as D.C. is from New York. So right. It's an added pressure. I don't think we often think about this, certainly in the U.S. I mean, Justine Henin playing the French Open, that's a home game. That's a kid from Philly playing at the U.S. Open.
It's a weekend trip.
Exactly. So yeah. I think that's something that we often don't consider. I'll give you a few other names. Petra Kvitova, who is a multiple-time winner and came very, very close to winning the Australian Open in that final against Osaka. Nice clay court player. Has been a bit, but the Australian Open notwithstanding, has been a bit disappointment in the majors. But what do we think of her, Jamie?
I think it's great. So last year she came back for the French versus coming back from Wimbledon after she had that incident. And I thought it was great that she decided to do that, you know, knowing very well that Wimbledon is kind of her space. And right. She came back a little early and, you know, got some time under her belt. And now fast forward a year and she's in a much better place. I think she's gotten so much more comfortable on the clay in the past year. And really shown that she can play. Where is she?
She is the sixth seed in the last name on the second quadrant,
there
first page.
Yeah.
Give me your give me A, your best player seed 17-32, and then give me your unseeded dark horse. You want me to go first?
Yes.
She's in that rough quarter, but take a look. Maria Sakkari has been playing very well. And as far as an unseeded dark horse, I keep an eye on Monica Puig, who, remember, won the gold medal less than 2 years ago at the Olympics. That was on a hard court, but nevertheless, she's kind of started to awaken a bit. It's been a rough 18 months or so for her. But I also, Vondrousova, I'm looking for here. I do not see her. Here she is in the fourth quadrant, the teenage Czech who plays big and plays small. She has a nice variety to her game. I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of clay court performance we're going to see from Andreescu, who was such a terrific player in March and then probably overplayed, had a shoulder injury, and has not played since Miami. But here we'll see her on the clay, and we'll see her as the 22nd seed. This is a player who started the year outside the top 100, and now she's seeded number 22. What do you got, Jamie? Two more. 17-32 and then unseeded.
Petra Martic, definitely.
Good athletic player. Been to the second week of the French Open before. That's a nice call.
Right, so that's what I was going to say. You know, been there before.
Ostapenko, Azarenka, perhaps?
You think one of them will get through that quarter?
I think whoever wins that has a real shot. No, I don't think they'll get through the quarter, but I think whoever wins that has a real shot against Osaka. Mm-hmm. Who, remember, had that strange injury in Rome. Again, Naomi Osaka, and bless her, I think this is completely to her credit. She's won three titles for her career. Indian Wells and a pair of majors. Never won a clay court title. Let me spoon feed you another name as we go down the list. Svetlana Kuznetsova, former champion.
Always.
It's a few years ago. It's a decade ago. But might I suggest she'll give Pliskova a workout in the second round?
Definitely.
All right, good.
And Venus Williams, can we just have a moment, unseated, but
no, good, absolutely.
I mean,
good for
we I don't think it's really discussed enough how great, you know, we talk about Serena and we talk about Federer, but Venus is out there and she is older and she is still going along here, and you know, props to Venus.
I'm totally with you. And I also say, you're right. I mean, we talk about Serena at age 37. Venus, we forget, is the older sibling. I think she's out here. Why is she out here? Because she enjoys the competition. Is she going to win this tournament? Unlikely. But I give her for a lot of credit. This nonsense, I wrote about this week, about this nonsense of telling athletes when they need to retire and tarnishing reputations. We need to retire the phrase tarnished reputation. Venus Williams has not won a major in more than a year, and I mean more than a decade, and you know what? It has not tarnished anything. All right, you're saying Halep. I'm saying Pliskova. Not particularly bold. We're going with the top two choices. Neither of us particularly likes the one seed and that unfortunate draw she has. Any other parting thoughts before we move on to the men?
I was going to say, I'll give you one more unseeded.
Good.
Kiki Mladenovic, because only because I would like to see her and her new coach, figure something out. She beat Belinda Bencic a few weeks ago.
Yeah, very good.
So maybe something brewing there. I mean, she at one point was...
Two years ago,
yeah.
People were picking her to win the tournament.
Yeah, so I think that says a lot, and we kind of saw what Sasha had done with Naomi, so who knows?
I like that. Good call. All right, let's go to Kiki Mladenovic's significant other is a contender on the men's side. That is our segue. Let's look at the men's draw. My leading question to you is, how big an upset is it, Jamie, if Nadal and Djokovic do not play for the 54th time 2 weeks from Sunday in the final? A, how big an upset do you assess that as being? And B, who is the player or players that will preclude that?
Big upset, I think. I think we're sort of underrating how much is at stake for all of these players. Now that I looked at the draw and kind of was diving into this lead up into the French Open is kind of really good on the men's side. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, we talk about Nadal not really having as good of a clay court season as he typically does leading up to the French, but he did get a win over Djokovic, so maybe that set the record straight a bit. But Djokovic is going for a second career slam.
Right, four in a row.
Which is pretty incredible. Nadal is going for 12.
That's pretty incredible as well, I would submit.
Very incredible. And Federer's back, and although he has only won the French Open once a decade ago, which is a really long time, remarkable that he's still kind of in the mix, and he will be like the wild card in all this. So,
yeah, I mean, everyone's sort of reading the tea leaves. Why is Roger playing the clay? And I think one of the reasons, honestly, is because he's been playing some really good ball lately. He was not an outstanding clay court season for Roger, but again, he hasn't played the French Open in 4 years. Not the greatest draw, but this is a guy who can play his way into a tournament. I think that Rome final really loomed large going in. I mean, remember what happened in the Australian Open final when Novak Djokovic just obliterated Nadal. If Djokovic had beaten Rafa in Rome, coming off of back-to-back three-setters in that environment with the French Open a week away, that's a devastating loss to Nadal. As it was, Nadal wins that match, and the Djokovic company line, I think quite rightly, is he was awfully tired. I mean, he's sort of said, I'm not going to talk about fatigue, thereby discussing fatigue after that match. But, Rafa had to win that match, and he did win that match. And I think he is the favorite with the betting public. I'm picking him to win mostly just by virtue of history. It's very hard to pick against not only an 11-time champion and the defending champion, but also the guy who did win the previous clay court tournament.
Right.
So I think that third set of that Rome match. I mean, remember, Rafa wins that first set 6-0, which I believe is the first six-love set in 53 career matches that those two have had. I think that's the first set that either of them won six-love. Djokovic comes back. I mean, Nadal had break points to serve out the match. Djokovic comes back, wins the second set, and you're thinking, oh, boy, if Rafa loses this, in a way, it's just as wounding as that demolition in Melbourne. As it turns out, Nadal wins the match. Djokovic clearly a spent player by the end, and we've got some intrigue headed into Roland Garros. I think that the I was doing a Tennis Channel event that I'll plug a few nights ago, and player, oh, what about Dominic Thiem, and what about Zverev and Tsitsipas? And I still think that best of five on clay is such a critical difference from best of three. Thiem won six best of five matches last year, reached the final, but I just think there's really, there's a limit to how much I'm willing to read into a best of three win versus a best of five win. And I think that over the course of a best of five match, it's just that much bigger of a sample size, that much bigger a chance that tennis will revert to the mean and the better player will prevail. That happens so often. So especially in this best of five format, I have to believe we're going to see Nadal and Djokovic 54.
And does it get any better for Nadal? He gets a qualifier, and then he plays the winner of a qualifier.
Quali.
First a qualifier.
Right.
I mean, if that...
No, he won't play a top 100 opponent.
Right. And I think that's the kind of thing at this point that he probably really needed. So if you ask me, you know, before the draw, I think the biggest question, whenever we come to the French Open, who are you going to pick for the men? The biggest question is, are you willing to bet against Rafa?
Right.
And I think if you asked me before this draw came out, I might have been feeling a little frisky and might have said, yeah, maybe. Maybe I'm willing. I think Dominic Thiem is ready. I think he's gonna win his first major. Now, when you look at that, I mean, it's like getting two good hands, you know, when you're playing cards. I mean, he draws a qualifier.
You're talking about Nadal here.
Yeah, he draws a qualifier, and then he plays the winner of a qualifier versus a qualifier. I mean, fate and luck in Paris.
Right. I mean, look at Nadal's draw. Goffin is a player that's really not going to hurt him. I mean, you look at the other seeded players in his quadrant. Nishikori is not a player who's going to win a best of five match against Rafa on clay. Dimonor, Medvedev is a tricky opponent, but again, that's not the worst quarterfinal matchup. Medvedev lost his last clay court match to Nick Kyrgios, and I think Medvedev comes in on a three-match losing streak. Is that right? I think the larger point, though, that you raised, which I think is really smart, is that we pick names, and I think Halep, I think Pliskova, we forget about all the variables, right? So did your fourth-round match take your legs out from you? Was there a rain delay? I mean, Nadal lost a set to Diego Schwartzman last year, the only set he lost at the French Open. It rains. They come back the next day. The court plays differently. The sun is in a different place. Nadal's had a good night's sleep. He's in a better mood, and he rolls, wins in four sets. Everybody go home.
Right.
We forget about all the variables that can go into a tournament of this length and of this size with 128 players, 127 matches, and something like Nadal not having to face a top 100 opponent until the third round, that is the kind of variable that that can help you out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the equivalent of walking on the street and finding a $100 bill on the floor.
There you go. A 100 euro bill, Jamie. Who else do we have? Someone just sent me within the hour a long GQ profile on Francis.
Big Foe.
Yeah, Big Foe, exactly. Big Foe is the 32nd seed, gets very lucky, and gets the last seed, again, to complete one of our themes. So he will not face a top 100, a top opponent ranked higher than him until the third round. That opponent is likely to be Tsitsipas. Francis, last American standing, safe to say? You with me on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. You have Taylor Fritz playing Bernard Tomic in the first round.
Our friend Tommy Paul, and last week's guest. Did you see that?
Yeah, Tommy Paul gets Dominic Thiem.
Yeah. No John Isner, no Jack Sock will be playing that event we talked about, I think, last week. Jack Sock will be trying to work his game back. He'll be in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Right. Sam Querrey could be a potential second-round opponent for Novak Djokovic, which is kind of interesting. It was only 2016 that he, you know, beat him on grass. So, you know, maybe a little bit of something there for Sam to chew on when he faces him. But yeah,
you're with me, Francis.
Yeah.
Last man standing
for
the U.S. I would also point out, as long as going back to Querrey, Novak's first opponent, Hubert Hurkacz. I saw him a little bit in Indian Wells.
Yeah.
Nice young player. I mean, I don't think Djokovic is going to lose, but he could get pushed around for 4-4-4 kind of match.
As we were saying, goes to an extra set or gets pushed around a little bit.
Right.
That could play a role later on.
No, look at Novak's draw. I mean, again, that women's top quadrant is the roughest quarter I've seen in a long time at a major. That's that Wimbledon quarter in the men's from a few years ago. But Novak's quarter, you know, there's some tough players. Munar comes from the Nadal Academy. Gilles Simon pushed him to five sets in Australia a few years ago. Shapovalov, Borna Coric is a nice player. Fognini is now in career high ranking at age 31, 32. Lajovic, a fellow Serb. There are a lot of nice players. And Bautista Agut, who's beaten Novak twice already this year. Zverev, I mean, that's a rough quarter for Novak to come through. Speaking of Zverev, it's been an awfully rough year. Already double-figure losses for the fifth seed. Do you give him any chance, Jamie? I don't like that he's in Novak's quarter.
Yeah,
not just in that's going to make it hard for him to win the tournament. I just think if you're a player that's really struggling and you're in a bad headspace.
I was just going to take the words out of my mouth.
Say it.
Yeah, the headspace. I think it depends on if he's in a good place or not. If he's still, you know, riding the wave saying, oh, I'm just not feeling it. I'm not in a good place. And he's telling himself that every day. Not good for the French Open. If he's been able to maybe find a new space and move on and really wrap his head around what he needs to do to get better, maybe, you know, I think he's got to string together a first few matches, though, because hasn't proven that he can do that in the best of five format just yet.
Best of five has not been a friend. All right, top player seed 17 to 32. Fernando Verdasco, mid-30s, plays Dan Evans. That's a rough first rounder, but 23rd seed Fernando Verdasco is a player to watch. I'm going to watch this guy, Matteo Berrettini, who's 29. He's 6'5". Not a player that many people have perhaps seen play. He's already won one clay court title this year. An obvious pick is Stan. I mean, that there's a bunch of seeds. It's like 25. It's Felix. It's Stan. It's Verdasco. There's a pocket of seeds from like 24 to 28 that I would put up against any four seeds from a bracket higher. Stan is a former champion, of course, comes in at number 24. So, Jamie, who do you got 17 to giving you lots of choices? Who do you got 17 to 32?
I'm going to go with FIA.
Nice.
I think, you know, he hasn't proven Lay is not his best surface necessarily, but we had him on. He's only 18. He should be able to play his way through for the first couple rounds. And looking forward to first main draw appearance for him. So
Del Potro is the first seed that he would play. And I don't know where Del Potro's a little bit in the Serena boat. We all
right.
know what the ball striking is about, but I just don't think they have the match play, especially on the men's side, best of five.
I will say, though, he's back and healthy in his terms, which is good to see. I think tennis is better when he's playing. But he did have an unfortunate – he had to play two matches in one day.
Right.
Which probably not great for him. And I think maybe he would have gone a little bit farther. You know, he had to play Djokovic. But if he's on and he's healthy, he's had success. So
the best of five – makes me nervous. Do you have a dark horse outside the top 32? Everybody likes Garin, the former junior champion at Roland Garros,
yeah.
who's won multiple clay court titles in the last, like, 40 days. And I'll throw another one at you that I suppose we need to give lip service to. Nick Kyrgios, unseeded.
Cameron Norrie in the first round.
Cameron Norrie in the first round, obviously coming off the pyrotechnics in Rome, but people forget that before that he beat Medvedev, which is a nice clay court win. I feel a little talked out on Kyrgios, but if we restrict this to tennis, it's a rough unseeded player. If you're looking at names in the draw, if you are, say, Zverev when Kyrgios looms, that's not an opponent I would look forward to playing.
That's fair. Right. He gets I was listening to him on the podcast with Ben Rothenberg, No Challenges Remaining. And he's just so, he has such a different attitude than you hear from so many tennis players. And I don't know, it kind of like think it's a little refreshing that he has this perspective on kind of mental health and all these other things that I know aren't always displayed in his actions. But I think that it's nice to hear somebody talk about it in the way that he does.
I feel like we have a whole suite of other podcasts that are waiting to use this room where we could talk about Nick Kyrgios for a long, long time. I think there's a lot of complexity there. And I think that I can't remember who I want to give credit to the right person. I think it was Catherine Whitaker who I heard talk about this. And she's absolutely right that it is not binary. And it's an oversimplification to say he's great and refreshing. I mean, there's a lot he does that's indefensible. And at the same time, I think you're right, Jamie. I mean, I think he is so different, and his approach is different, and there's a sort of sense of candor there, and I don't have time for artifice. And we talk about other players who aren't necessarily authentic, or they believe one thing and say another. I don't think he gets accused of that. It's an interesting cast member to have. You wish there were more winning. You wish there were more professionalism. You wish there were more of a commitment. But no, I mean, that remarkable podcast with Ben Rothenberg, and I give Ben a lot of credit for teeing this up. I mean, it takes a certain kind of interview to get those kinds of responses. I think there's some question about whether the eruption the next day, I think there may have been a connection. He's articulated all of this. He's seen the response on social media. He basically, in so many words, predicted what he was about to do. He just got done with this therapy session where he questioned his own commitment and admitted to having a less than wholehearted commitment to the sport and talked about his own professionalism. And
right.
Then 12 hours later, you're faced with adverse circumstances and you throw a chair. I think it's easy to make a connection there. But strictly keeping this to tennis, Nick Kyrgios, interesting unseated player.
Dark horse
in that
here.
top half of the drop. All right. We need to give up the room quickly. Is there one off-course story? This is a topic that was sent to both of us in the roundtable that will be forthcoming on SI.com. Is there an off-court story you will be paying particularly close attention to?
I mentioned it when we first came in here, but the oddly timed announcement right before 18 minutes or so, right before the draw was about to come out, ITF says that they have reached some sort of agreement to, you know, optimize how the ATP and WTA tours are structured. So should be interesting.
That ill-conceived transition tour, whatever the euphemism is now, the ITF Pro Tour that was so controversial and so I basically universally reviled from all corners. Not one of the ITF's prouder moments, but good for them for apparently recognizing that this was deeply defective. And it does seem as though, again, the press release timing a little curious. Not sure what is to be gained by sending out a press release mere minutes before the draw of a major, but that's a good point. That will be a story to follow on this transition tour, which again, we have had people on the podcast talk about it. It's been a lot of chatter on social media and in the players' lounge. This is something that sort of passed under cover of darkness, and then once people recognized the reality, they said, "Whoa, this is really a bad system." And it does seem as though there have already been some corrections to that. So that's a positive.
The other thing is which you will go see very shortly when you arrive in Paris. But they last year after Nadal won, they knocked everything down and, you know, kind of started to rebuild. So I'm curious to see. I think, you know, not just like optics, vision-wise, what everything looks like, but I think when, you know, courts are changed or you warm up in a different area or you got to enter a different way and, oh, no, now this is how it works, those kind of things can throw a player off, or just it's just not as comfortable if something's a little different and there's the new court and there's some greenhouses and all this other stuff that I read about in an architecture magazine of all things, which I thought was very interesting.
Is that right?
Yeah, they did this whole big thing on the new court.
No, I think that's very perceptive, and I think honestly the flip side of that, Jamie, is that good for the French Open. You had the feeling that mostly because of the grounds. Look, you're in Paris. It's beautiful. It's red clay. But you did have the feeling this event was slipping a bit behind the other majors. It's obviously pointed out it was the only major that doesn't have a roof court. I mean, there could
coming
be rain delays this year. Yep,
coming
next year.
Oh.
And a lot of this was done. Some of this was bureaucracy. And some of this was, you know, there were I've never seen so much sort of the equivalent of city council legislation, but I think a lot of this is tied also to the forthcoming Olympic Games. But I think it's good for the French Open. I think it's good for tennis that the venue is going to change. And I think you're right. I think for, you know, we see this at other tournaments. We saw this at the U.S. Open when suddenly the grandstand looked a lot different.
Right,
and do I
right.
take a golf cart or do I walk? And
yeah,
the practice, I mean,
how
it's
does it
changes.
Sound? I mean, the noise was such a huge thing at the U.S. Open, and
camera angles.
Yeah, how close the fans are, how loud they are. You know, where who's in your right. sight line when you're sitting in the chair. I mean, all those things. I think, you know, we don't really talk about, or people may brush aside as they don't really matter. But I think they do.
I think you're right, but I also think, give me growth over contraction any day of the week. So the fact that the grounds are expanding and there are new courts and new venues, that's a good good sign, and especially for the French Open, which you did have this sense was starting to trail the other majors.
You'll have to report back. Let us know.
Happily report back. All right, we will do periodic podcasts from the French Open. But I want to let's get this up. We got to give up the room anyway. But let's get
You've
this up.
You got a flight to catch.
I've got a flight to catch. All right, there you have it. Our quasi 2019 French Open predictions. This is our draw ceremony here at the Sports Illustrated Podcast Studios. Thanks as always to Jamie, who does such good work here. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks, John. You do great work,
too. I would acknowledge that. all right. If people wanted to sign up, leave a review, or subscribe to this podcast, where might they go?
They can go everywhere. They can go to Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. They can go on Stitcher. They can go on Spotify. They can hear us anywhere. They can download. They should like and leave us a review.
Sounds good. All right. Enjoy week one from the French Open. We will check back periodically. Thanks, as always, to Jamie. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again.